You may be seated. As you're seated, affluenza, I'm telling you, is much more dangerous than influenza, much more serious than catching the flu that's sweeping the world, is continuing to live with the deadly materialism. What is affluenza? It's so dangerous, the world has even noticed it. It's the habitual longing for and chasing after money and stuff. In fact, one gifted Christian writer once called it possession obsession. It is that desire to possess money and things and pleasure and experiences that we kind of collect through life, and the one who has the most is the winner. A friend of mine, in fact, the closest friend I have between, the Lord and Mbani, and then this person is my closest friend, is a mini storage magnate. He has earned a fortune with mini storages. And he told me, he says, John, that's just the best investment of all. He says, you know, it's boom proof and bust proof. He says, in the booming times, people are renting my mini storages because they want to have a whole one for all their boat and all that stuff. And then they have another one for their winter stuff. And they have another one for all of their furniture that isn't as nice as the newer furniture they just bought, but they don't want to get rid of the old. And then they have, and he says, they just have, so that's in the boom times. But he says, in the down times, the bust times, he says, I go up too. Because he says, all these people can't make their house payments, and so they got to get all their stuff into the mini storage and sell the house so they can keep living, but they don't want to get rid of the stuff. And he said, so it's a boom and bust proof industry. And he just keeps building units. And he runs 95% occupancy. Why? Because we have this disease. Possession obsession. It's hard to get rid of stuff. And we'll sacrifice to get more when we already have because we want it a little better. It's unbelievable. Well, a few years ago, the public broadcasting system funded by our federal government aired a special television program where they actually looked at America's consumptive desires, and they titled it, of all things, affluenza. They're the ones that invented that word. They took a spin-off of influenza, made it affluenza, and what they called it was the warning against the modern-day plague of materialism, of people sacrificing their family, their marriages, even their health for things. It's almost like we worship stuff, and we'll sacrifice anything to get it. Now, they didn't preach. They just observed symptoms, and it's still on the internet. You can look at their PBS series. It's called Affluenza. But what they said while they were filming, they did a little cultural sociological study, and they said the average American shops 6 hours a week while spending only 40 minutes a week face-to-face playing with their children. And they said, now there's a symptom. They can spend 6 hours, you know, prowling the sales and going through piles of stuff and fighting over it, but only 40 minutes a week. That's 6 minutes a day. Having enough time to stop and play with the children. They said more Americans declare bankruptcy every year than graduate from college. 90% of divorce cases is what PBS said. By the way, I don't even know if this is true. You know why? We're finding out that our federal government will give any statistics to prove a point whether they're true or not. Okay, but PBS, at least they agree with the Bible here. And they said 90% of divorce cases have an argument about money as a prominent thread in the divorce. Now, that's what the world is saying. The world is saying there's affluenza, and it's dangerous. In conjunction with their program, they prepared a series of questions to help the viewers know if they were infected. I thought these were fascinating. Sounds like Paul wrote them. You know, I'll just read a few of them. Their list is, are you escaping from affluenza? This is how you would know. Number one, my life would be happier if I had more money. If you think that, you have affluenza. If you think you would be happier if you have more money, then you're infected with that materialism. Because money does not buy happiness. It only buys more places to look for it. And some people spend their life endlessly looking for happiness, and they look happy because they're always going somewhere, but they haven't found it. Because money doesn't buy it. Materialism can't produce it. Another question they have, I feel overwhelmed by the amount of stuff I have and the amount of time it takes to pay for the stuff, maintain the stuff, store the stuff, and protect the stuff. I think about that. You know, this list even for the unsaved, is a very good one for them to think about. Because did you know that materialism will affect your marriage? Did you know one of the things that I looked for when I was dating my wife was how materialistic she was, whether or not she was going to be endlessly asking me for more and more and more and never be happy and just want more and just make me on that endless treadmill of providing? I actually tested my wife. She didn't even know it. When I was in seminary, I worked for a neurosurgeon, a godly man. He earned $3,500 a half hour in the 60s and 70s when I worked for him. And, I mean, that's a lot of money. He would be flown all over whenever movie stars or politicians had neurological, you know, brain surgery needed. He was flown in. He was centered in Memphis and just very, very successful. But when I worked for him, he had a fleet of seven of the most valuable American cars. He had twin Mercedes 550 with heated everything and had every kind of brushed and, you know, perfect everything, seats. And then he had a sports car that had such a big engine that you didn't even have to push very hard to just, you could sit there and spin your tires and burn them. It had such a torque to it. And then he had a stretch limousine, he had the Jeep, and he had the off-road thing, and then he had, I forget all these different cars. And I was their butler. They paid me $15 an hour to polish the cars to help me go through seminary. And so when I met Bonnie, I said, could I borrow some of your cars? And they said, you know where the keys are. You can use all of them. I said, really? Thank you. And so the first seven dates with Bonnie, I roared up in front of her faculty housing with a different expensive car every night. And I remember just taking her out, and as I opened the door, I felt those warm handles because they were heated, and, you know, and the warm seats and all the fur. They had fur on their leather seats, and she got in, and we went out, and I'd drop her off. The next night, she'd climb up into this off-road with those huge tires, you know, and we were along. And then we got into the, and I screeched my tires a couple times, you know, sure, I was tough. And on the seventh night, it was the Mercedes 550 S, whatever it was, L. And I let her off and I drove away. And then the next date, I came in my 72 Caprice. The one I had from Michigan. It had mats where the rust had eaten through. I don't know if they do that anymore, but when I was little, rust would eat through the floorboards, and when you'd hit a puddle, it'd up into the car. So I had plastic mats to cover all those holes so it wouldn't splash her, you know, the mud puddles. And I remember as I came around, I started opening the door, and it was so rusted, it went like that. And I said, I'm so sorry, Bonnie, that you have to ride in this car. She looked at me, turned her head. She said, what do you mean? I said, this is my car. I said, it has rusty doors and has mats covering holes. She said, you mean this is different than the other nights? Honestly, she had not noticed all the work I went through with my seven different cars and seven nights in a row. She didn't notice the difference between the cars. She tells me it's because she thought so much of me. But actually, I knew it was because she was not what? Yeah. She didn't measure things materialistically. She didn't think that by what I wore, what I drove, or what she perceived I had, I was better than someone that didn't have that. And PBS said it. If you think that you never have enough, then you're eaten up by this materialism. You can read the rest of things online. But basically, this list indicts most people as having in this affluenza. The program concludes with this. They interviewed the people of 100 years ago that were the mega wealthy. Now, you know, we have, you know, the Buffetts and Gates and I forget who all the really rich people are and the movie stars and all that. But back in the old days, we had really rich people. They didn't have richness in stock. They had richness in everything. I mean, they owned the country. They owned the land. They owned the railroads. They owned everything. The guy that owned all the railroads, his name was W.H. Vanderbilt. This is what PBS records as saying, the care of my 200 million is enough to kill anyone. I have no pleasure in it. You can tour Mr. Vanderbilt's homes. He owned an entire square New York City block. It was one house. A whole block was his house. That one burned, but you can tour Vanderbilt's estate called Biltmore, North Carolina. There's another seaside cottage, he called it, one of the most expensive homes ever built in America in Newport, Rhode Island. And when you walk around, we've gone through it many times, on the wall are the pictures of his family. You know what his family turned out to be? Alcoholics, cirrhosis, divorce, suicide, unhappy, broken lives. Because money doesn't buy happiness. John Jacob Astor, the great socialite, he said, I'm the most miserable man on earth. J.D. Rockefeller, you know, Standard Oil, Exxon, you know, the first billionaire, him. I have made many millions, but they brought me no happiness. John D. Rockefeller. Andrew Carnegie, you know, U.S. Steel. Millionaires seldom smile. And here's a hometown boy, Henry Ford. You know what he said? I was happier when I was a mechanic.